Okay. We're studying the seventh chapter of Matthew's Gospel, the Sermon on the Mount. We're looking at the 13th and 14th verses this morning, once again. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be that go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth into life, and few there be that find it. In studying the Sermon on the Mount, the one thing that we have to understand up front is that this is a message that the world is not going to appreciate. And the reason is because it sets forth a very narrow view of many things. There are somewhere close to 4 billion people, I believe, in the world today, and everybody has an opinion. And it's amazing how much they differ. You go into any room with any number of people and begin to talk about most any subject, and you'll have various opinions on things. The ultimate question of life, and it was one of the ultimate issues in the area of philosophy among the philosophers, was that of seeking and finding ultimate authority. And the reason is because of all the diversity of opinions. All of the opinions cannot be right. And if all we have, if the best we can ever do is go into a room where no one agrees, then how can we ever have civilization? How can we ever have community? And reasonable people understand this. There has to be something to bring us together, to have unity. And to have unity, you have to think alike. You have to agree on something. And so one of the big deals with the philosophers was that of trying to exercise their natural wisdom and reach out and bring back ultimate truth. And that way you could have civilization, you could have government, you could have community. And of course they utterly failed in their effort to do that. And that's the importance of our calendar date. Some 2,000 years ago, Christ came. He came into the world and he gave us what we needed, and that is ultimate truth. He is the ultimate truth. His word is absolute. And when he says that something is right, it's forever right. It doesn't change because he doesn't change. When he says something is wrong, then it's forever wrong. And God is one. He's not many. He is one. God is one. Now, that concept represents the narrow gate. There ain't but one that's right in the universe when it comes to views or opinions, and that's the Lord. Now, when you go out here as a Christian and you begin to be a witness of this one thing, that Jesus Christ is the truth, and you're going to run into a problem. Because people are offended by that. The reason they're offended by that is because we naturally appreciate our view. We appreciate our opinion. We appreciate our will and not the mind and will of some other person. So this is deep in our nature, and it's bound in emotion. And when you begin to talk with somebody and it it's discovered that you disagree on some point, all of a sudden emotions get involved. And depending on the subject matter and how much it might affect the person you're talking to, it can result in intense anger and hostility. As a matter of fact, it can reach the point that you will do like Cain did, who killed his brother. And so this is no little matter. This is huge. And so the thing that I want to impress upon you this morning is that this view, which really represents the straight gate and the narrow way, is really speaking of the Lord Jesus Christ. And this truth that has come down to us from heaven, the world doesn't like it, folks. The world does not like it. They didn't like him, and they're not going to like you. But we live in a world where people do not accept this narrow view. And they are those that are represented here by the wide gate. The wide gate. Now, I've told you many times here in this church that in the world there are very few churches that really have a handle on the truth. And sometimes when you come to Calvary and you hear this repeatedly, speaking of this church, the impression can be received that we believe that Calvary is the only one around that has the truth and is teaching the truth. Well, that's not the case. I know of a number of churches round about where the truth is preached, and there's no question about it. Pastors that I know and love that stand for the truth, and I appreciate them so much. But I'll tell you this, there are very few of them. Precious few. There are so few that one of the things that I kind of marvel at, I don't think Paul Frisby is here today, but sometimes he breaks loose from Raleigh and comes down to visit with us. He's been really sort of a member of this church for many, many years, and he knew Brother Kent very well and helped him a lot up there in the legislative battle that we were dealing with during the Christian school lawsuit. And how many times he has told me, Brother Dwight, I can't find a church up here. I can't find a church up here. We're talking about Raleigh, folks. We're talking about Raleigh. I can't find a church up here that preaches the truth like it's coming out of this church. He's not the only one. He's not the only one. There are quite a number of people that live in other parts of the country that have said exactly the same thing. It's getting harder and harder to find a gospel preaching church where the truth is set forth in all its purity. The other day, I went to speak with a local representative here. I'm not going to name some names because I don't think it would be good with it going out the way these messages do. But I'm going to some extent, name some things to establish the point, give you just an example of how close to home this the false gospel is and the kind of things that are being taught in some of the churches right here in this community. There's a congregational church of Pinehurst called the United Church of Christ, and I got hold of a little message prepared. I don't know the minister. It doesn't even mention the name on this. I don't know the minister. I don't have to. It's not the point. But there was a baptismal service, obviously, being involved in a little bit of a poetic presentation of the ceremony entitled, Are All the Children In? Are All the Children In? So there was baptismal ceremony. And it says here, just to lift out some of the statements, I hear echoes of the same divine call in the sacrament of baptism that we will celebrate together this morning. Baptism is a recognition that God has created each of us and knows us intimately by name. And baptism is a recognition that God is continually calling God's people home. Home, listen to this, to their true selves. Home to their true selves. Not to Christ. No mention of being conformed to the image of Christ, but being called home to our true selves. Very opposite of the truth of the message of the Bible. As we baptize, and I'm not going to call the child's names, infant baptism, as we baptize this morning, we acknowledge that she has come to us from God, and that God is already alive in her. So there's no point where the free will of this child exercises itself to choose Christ and is converted by an act of her free will. No. The message being preached in that church is that she has come as an infant to be baptized. And God is already alive in her. She's already indwelt by God as a child of God, which is heresy, absolute heresy. We commit ourselves to the grace-filled work of helping her become her truest self. Helping her become her truest self. Again, no mention of being conformed to the image of Christ. No mention of hating your life. He that loveth his life, he that cometh to his true self and doesn't see it for what it is, that we're monsters of iniquity, deserving of hell. That's the message of the Bible. But folks, that's a narrow message. And it's a despised message. But this message right here is the wide gate message. It's the wide road message. And many there be that go in there. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good example of it too. Fall on your heart. The idea of following your heart. Bad counsel. So we commit ourselves to the grace-filled work of helping her become her truest self by nurturing her in the faith. What faith? Well, it's not the faith that God has in himself that he has revealed to us, speaking of his power to give us this faith that is in himself, that empowers us to be like him. I wasn't talking about that at all. And then it says the profound beauty to be found in baptizing an adult as we did with one of this child's mothers 2.5 years ago. This child had two mothers. What are we talking about here? We're talking about lesbians. We're talking about lesbians that have a child and they're bringing them to a church to be baptized. That's what we're talking about. That's going on in this country. And it's going on in the name of Christ, in the name of the true church. And it's going on right here in our community.
Mr. Priest, why do you think that the homosexual lesbian community wish to wrap themselves in the Christian trappings, to be married, to have baptisms? Why do you feel that they just need this need to intrude on stuff they don't believe?
Because the natural man cannot live without community. And there's something that reinforces our own personal view when we find ourselves in a community that agrees. We are not, human beings are a great big old word I learned years ago. We're gregarious by nature. We have to fellowship with other people. We need other people. We can't live alone. There's something about our nature. It's kind of, the Lord even mentioned it in the Garden of Eden. It is not good for man to be alone. People do not like to be alone. They like community. And as well as I do, in growing up, isn't it painful to maybe go to school and here you are, you're trying to grow up and you're trying to figure out what life is all about and who you are, and you're trying to acquire some kind of identity and so forth, and you go to school and all of a sudden you find yourself isolated from the popular group. How many times have I experienced this as in education here, where a little girl or maybe a little boy will come into my office and they'll be all so sad and I'll say, "What's wrong?" And the statement will be, "Nobody likes me. They won't include me." There's something about our nature. We need acceptance. We need acceptance. And we need community. And it strengthens us. It gives us a sense of personal security when we're surrounded by people that, will respect us and so forth. A lot of times it can get you into a lot of trouble if the popular group are up to no good. Sometimes children will be sucked into a group like that and follow that path because of the power of loneliness and how it affects the life. And so I think to answer the question, why do the gays, why are they fighting so hard? Why is there a temper behind this thing? And it's because they passionately need acceptance. And the voice of God, which is the voice of the Christians, we're those that teach God's word. I mean, folks, listen to me. What do I know apart from this book? I'll be as candid as I know how. If it was not for this book, if I had no knowledge of God whatsoever, I would not be against homosexuality. And the reason I wouldn't is because I wouldn't have a basis. Because if you disallow God, now follow this, if you disallow God from being a part of your life, then you fall into this category of thinking where truth is a burden that is upon each individual to decide for himself. And that is the religion of this world today, is we have got to be tolerant, we have got to be accepting of people of other opinions. And so if I push this tolerance thing, and this is what's so powerful about the homosexual movement, is their doctrine of the faith is tolerance. You got to tolerate them. Well, when you do this, You're essentially saying that their understanding of truth is equal to your understanding of truth. They differ, and you have to respect that. Mm-hmm. Better speak up just a little bit.
You know when they passed the law in New York, the marriage law?
Yeah.
They were happy with two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they just weren't married.
Mm-hmm.
The law had to live the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, see, this is the thing, you see. It gives it legitimacy. You see, the concept of law comes from God. He is the lawgiver. He is the lawgiver. The whole constitutional republic of America is based upon the view, the worldview, the faith that God and God alone is the lawgiver. He's a lawgiver. And again, I hate to repeat myself so much, but it's a profound statement that what Franklin said coming out of the Constitutional Convention, when he was asked, do we have a republic or an oligarchy? And he said, a constitutional republic, if you can keep it. If you can keep it. Well, the constitutional republic is based upon the protection of inalienable rights, which are God-given, as defined by God. But the only way that system of government would work would be if the consensus remained large enough, the Democratic majority remained large enough in favor of that presupposition or that worldview that there is God and He is the one that gives us the law. If He says that homosexuality is wrong, then the world is obliged to bow down to that, regardless of what their personal opinion is. Folks, what I meant when I said I would not be against homosexuality, folks, let me tell you something. When you destroy the concept of God in your mind, there is no such thing as ultimate right and wrong. There's only the individual. There's only life and eventually death. And right and wrong and what we do in life is not really morality as it is, as it might be described as events. Life is just a succession of events. If you get married, it's an event. If you rape somebody, it's an event. It's neither good nor evil. It's just an event. If you get a community of people to agree to a certain kind of event, then that's just a situation. It's just a situation. It's just a general situation at a given time. God is not a part of it. It's just, random chance event that is no different than meteors bombarding with some other celestial object out there. And eventually one day we die. It's just an event. That's it. And we cease to exist forever. And so if that's true, then is homosexuality wrong? No, there's no such thing as wrong. And there's no such thing as right if there is no God. Now, it's quite obvious that right and wrong is not determined by the Democratic majority. That is as vulgar as the idea that right and wrong is whatever the dictator says is right or wrong. There's no difference. What is the difference between a dictator, one man saying, okay, what I say is right, and when I say something is wrong, then it is wrong. What is the difference between that and a Democratic majority agreeing that a certain thing is right and a certain thing is wrong? There is no difference. Folks, if there is no God, there is no truth.
You get Hitler.
Yeah. Anything goes. And so back to this this religion here. It goes on to say, we do not know what personality she now holds within her. This little baby that's being baptized. We do not know if she will bear the gifts of extroverted connection or introverted groundedness. We do know if she will be right-handed. We do not know if she will be right-handed or left. We do not know if she will bear the gifts of being straight or the gifts of being gay. That's in a church. That's in a church. And either way she goes, if she chooses to be straight or if she chooses to be gay, either way, these are gifts. From who? God. He doesn't care. God doesn't care. See, folks, this is the wide gate. This is the wide gate. Now, this is an extreme example here. This is an extreme example. We could get into a message that would pertain to Calvary Memorial Church. There's a wide gate in every setting. There's a wide gate in your individual life that you're having to deal with every day. There's a wide gate in my life, in my mind, that I have to deal with every day. Because I am naturally drawn and pulled by the wide gate. Because that's what we are, up one side and down the other, naturally speaking. But it's that which we have to die to. We have to acknowledge it for what it is. We have to judge ourselves. We have to learn with reasons why we should despise ourselves and want to be like Christ, want to be converted. Conversion is not, you know, an easy kind of thing where you just one day walk into church, walk down the aisle, say a few words, get dipped, and all of a sudden you're on your way to heaven. No. It is a war on the battlefront of the human mind where self has its view about things and what self wants. And there's this God that we're having to deal with. And we've got a God consciousness because he's put it in us. And we know he's there. And he's written his law in our hearts, whether we ever read a Bible or hear it preached. His word is in us. He put it there. Just like he puts wisdom in birds to navigate these long distances that they fly, this navigation ability. God puts that in these animals. And not only that, the grace of God that bringeth salvation has appeared unto all men in creation. The truth is preached in creation. God created this world. He's an infinitely wise God. And we are subject to him. And I'm telling you, I don't care who you are. When you're faced with the fact of death, the inevitability of death, you're going to cry out, "Oh God." I'll never forget riding down US-1 highway one time, and this guy had a wreck, And when he had the wreck, the car door flew open, and he went flying out down the road and tumbling over and over and going through the air. He was crying out, "Oh, God!" I don't know anything about him personally, what his beliefs were or anything else. But atheists that spend their life trying to convince the world that their view is right, cry out, "Oh God." I remember reading one time a speech given by an atheist at some large university. And he finishes his speech, and at the very end he said, "God bless you," and he walked off the stage. Oh, me. And then you got the naturalists, you know, the tree huggers. And they've got to give. They can't live without a personal universe. And so what do? They give the universe personality and call it Mother Earth. Call the Earth Mother Earth. Mother Earth? Why do you have to call it Mother Earth? We can't live in a universe that's not personal. And so here we have this little child. I don't know the circumstances. I'm having to read between the lines. All I know is, how else can you take this than this is two women who have a child? They're both mothers. They're taking their child to a church that embraces the worldview that they embrace. They've got this invented Jesus Christ that loves everybody. No matter what you are, no matter what you've done. I wonder how they would think about it if they ran into some religious person, you know, that wanted to one day, according to his religious view, wanted to rape this little girl. I mean, if his view is there's nothing wrong with it. We've got a group of psychologists right now that's in the news trying to redefine pedophilia to not be a crime. Isn't that amazing? But you see, the downfall of the nation begins in the church. Can we scratch our heads and say, "I just can't understand what's happening to America," when you've got a citadel of Satan like this right here that's spewing out this kind of garbage? It's an insult that this place could be called a church. It's an insult. It says here, "We don't even know how her faith will emerge as it is shaped by life's unfolding. Will she embrace the Christian faith or of her parents and of this community? Or will her journey with Jesus lead her to other paths?" I mean, this is essentially saying that the path that the minister and her parents have chosen is not the only path there is out there. And the question is, will her journey with Jesus lead her to other paths? You mean there are other paths that Jesus leads people to? Now, folks, how do we reconcile that with the authoritative Word of God that says, I am the way and the truth and the life? No man cometh to the Father but by me. But by me. That's right. Yeah. So, folks, these are serious, serious things. I think sometimes we come to a place like this where we're so blessed to have been in a church where the truth has been preached for so long. And a lot of times we do not really have a handle on what is being preached in the churches round about. And every once in a while, when you're confronted with it, it's almost shocking. You wonder, how in the world could somebody be this far off? I mean, I can to some extent understand the confusion of people from time to time when they run into verses in the Bible that seem to indicate that God predestines people for good or evil. But you can very easily sit down with somebody that is teachable, and you can walk them through the scriptures in such a way that they understand perfectly the era of Calvinism and the place of the free will in the Christian faith. You can show somebody it's not something that is that complicated. Everything is simple that you understand. Well, how do you understand anything? You understand by studying here a little, there a little. But you have to have a teachable spirit. You can't teach somebody that knows everything. And I can guarantee you, if somebody gets hold of this tape, that you know, and this pastor gets hold of this thing, that I've said the things that I haven't named any names or whatever. I'm naming the church. I'm not doing any different than the Apostle Paul would do. I'm telling you, it's criminal not to name the church that's teaching this evil. It's criminal not to do it. It's the United Church of Christ, Congregational Church of Pinehurst. I don't know where it's located. I don't know a thing in the world about it. Okay.
Well, Mr. Creech, this issue here is among a lot of issues. As Christians who are taught, go out into the world, we get confronted with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't study it, or we don't think about it, and we don't understand it, we oftentimes may be shocked. But we are becoming less mainstream than that is now. Mm-hmm. We've turned a point in American history where that the truth is relative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm dealing with it all the time, we spoke before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just another one of the issues. And my question to you before is why is it that these folks want to wrap themselves in certain scriptures, but when you quote to them James, I am the way, the truth, and the life, that doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to be able to say, well, your worldview is so skewed. But then, again, emotions become involved, and there's just a lot more heat than there's light.
Now, you know that verse in Matthew that says, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall in no wise enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, listen to this. This is the message that's preached there. And in baptizing, and the child is named, we make a bold claim that no matter who she is or what choices she makes, she will always, always belong to God. Where's conversion in that, folks? Do what?
There is a little truth in that. She is a
Yeah. Just enough little truth to suck you in. And then the last thing I'm going to read to you, I think, is though we baptize one infant today, I believe the Christian sacrament of baptism implies our connection to all God's children of every race and ethnicity, every gender and sexual orientation, every religion and spiritual path. God is the creator of us all. But now I'll tell you what's interesting. This statement right here means that if I go over there and sit down with that pastor, I'm going to be treated with as much respect as a homosexual. And if they've got a homosexual who wants to go in front of church and give a message, then I'll be treated with equal respect if I go up there and preach the gospel according to his word. But let me tell you something. That ain't going to happen. Not because I wouldn't take them up on it. Listen, I would preach anywhere, anytime that I got a chance. But I'll tell you what. They would know when I came down out of that pulpit. They would know, thus saith the Lord. And they would know it in such a way that you cannot gainsay nor resist what thus saith the Lord says. There is a way to present this truth that appeals to reason, that appeals to logic, that appeals to common sense, that a person cannot, they cannot gainsay nor resist what you say. And the Lord Jesus did. He preached that way. He preached in such a way that when they intellectually tried to spar with him, they ended up speechless, not able to say anything. And from this point on, they durst not ask him any questions. And so we need to be those that study the Word of God and study the way he thinks. I mean, God is a... Let me just explain it this way. The essence of personality is your thought life. It's your thought life. That's the essence of personality. The essence of what you are as a human being is your thought life. And the wonderful thing is that we can know the innermost self of God because he has revealed to us his innermost self, the innermost self of what it means to be a personality, by revealing to us his word, his precious word. And when you study the mind of God, one of the things that you'll discover about it is that it's logical. It's very logical. It works. I mean, when you think about the Ten Commandments being the constitution of Israel as a nation, when everybody in the nation worships the Lord their God and has no other gods before them, that gives you unity. It gives you civilization. When you're told there isn't but one truth, there isn't but one lawgiver, and my Ten Commandments right here is my law, and everybody agrees to that, folks, you've got civilization. You've got a nation. You've got unity. You've got power in the nation. We have no power in America today because we're divided every direction in the world. Every direction in the world. There's no unity in this country. And the reason is because we've left God. And when you go down the list of the Ten Commandments, you will be studying the bedrock of civilization. Not coveting the things that belong to your neighbor. Every man having his own wife and realizing what you're doing when you get away from God's law concerning marriage. And stealing. Just being honest in your dealings. Folks, I'm telling you, how can you argue with that kind of logic? I'm telling you, the mind of God is a logical mind. And we ought to be in awe of the mind of God, in awe of His Word, because it's perfect. And what's interesting when you see the parallel between Israel and the United States of America, what was the United States of America's Constitution founded upon? But the one true and living God. There's no other. It was not God and Darwin. It was not God and the Democratic majority. It's a constitutional republic of laws. And the governing force in our American way of life is not the Democratic majority. It's this law of God that has come to us that safeguards the individual inalienable rights of each individual as God sees the individual. And if you don't respect that, then you got a problem with God. Folks, that's what it is. And we're living in a country that doesn't understand these things. And that's why I thank God for Return America and what, you know, Dr. Beatty is doing as he travels around the state. Please support him. In every way, especially in prayer, if you have the resources to send him a little support, support that effort. I'm telling you, if it wasn't for what this little organization is doing, we wouldn't be having a marriage amendment to vote on. I promise you this, folks. I promise you this. I talked to a representative Friday. And he told me, he said, Mr. Creech, he said, this is the only church in this area that has breathed a word to me about the marriage amendment. He said, there isn't a Baptist church in this county, not one pastor has called me and sat down with me and even reflected the idea that I represent them when I go up there to Raleigh. But he said, you know what? He said, it's interesting that you come to see me today. He said, because I just had a meeting the other day with the United Church of Christ. They called me and asked me to come. And he said, I'm getting calls from this crowd wanting me to go up there and kill that bill and not let the people in North Carolina vote on it. But the so-called Christians, he said, where are they? And I sat there and I felt like just crying. And so I stand up here and I say to you, this is a very unique place. And we've had people leave their church because statements like that have been made from this pulpit. This is a unique place. And we've been involved in these kinds of things for years. begging the churches round about this community to get involved. And have they? No. No, they haven't. Not in a way that's going to really count. Some of them are very, very gradually beginning to get a little slither of light slip into their brains about what's going on. You don't hear much of that anywhere else either, but here. We do talk about the Second Amendment here. But here's the sad thing, folks. The churches that are just beginning to wake up, it's kind of like running down to the train station and you got your suitcase with you and you have every intention of getting on board, but all you get to see is the caboose because the train is pulling away. You missed it. Sad state of affairs, folks. The churches in this community should have been on board years ago when we started Calvary Christian School. They should have listened, and they didn't. And they still don't listen. And it's amazing. You go out here and you can count them. Get your phone book and open them up. Start calling the preachers and ask them, do you have a Christian school? Do you perchance encourage your people in your congregation to put your kids in a Christian school, get them out of the public school? And I want you to have two columns if you want to do this. Get two columns. Those that actively preach from the pulpit that secular education and the teaching of Darwinian evolutionism and sexual orientation of all kinds being allowed, sexual activity, regardless of age, being provided contraceptive devices by the state of North Carolina, which does take place in the public school system. Do you ever get in the pulpit and preach that this is going on in the public school? And have you two columns? And I'll tell you what, in Moore County, if you can find a church other than this one that's doing that, I don't know what church it is yet. I told the preachers years ago at the fellowship I used to belong to, I said, you know something? Starting a Christian school is a complicated thing. It's expensive, and it takes, you know, staff to be able to have one. And a lot of churches don't have that. But I'll tell you what churches do have. They have the ability to take up a collection and have as a mission program of their church, rather than sending your money to Africa and South America and the Caribbean or, you know, some Polynesian island way off somewhere. Have you a missionary fund, and you churches get together and buy a bus and pay a driver and have that bus go around to the different churches in the community that believe in Christian education and bring them to Calvary Christian School. All you got to do is pull your funds together. You don't even have to have a school. We got a school. Got a Christian school. Be a bus driver and pick up the kids and the people. And then not only that, have a scholarship fund so that if you have people in your church that can't afford Christian education, that can be your mission. You know where that went? Nowhere. Did you know that our church, I had some money given to me. I had a man walk me in the door one time and wrote me a check for $10,000. I said, Mr. Creech, I want you to use this any way you can for the Lord's glory, especially for Christian education. Wrote me a check for $10,000. I took $3,000 of it, went to the meeting, started a scholarship fund among the churches in Moore County, and said, you know, you can take them to any Christian school. Doesn't have to be this one. I would prefer that it would be, but we were the only church that ever put any money in it. The only one. And a couple of the families did come to this one, and some of them went to Grace in Sanford off of that money that was given, $3,000. To my knowledge, not another dime has gone into the scholarship fund that was suggested, and that's been over 30 years ago. What a sad thing. Oh, well. Let's look to the Lord in prayer. Michael, would you dismiss us this morning?